How did you actually get nicked there?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Basically, a pint of milk and loaf of bread got me 5.5 years. I was the pace setter. I was the one always pushing the line. I got in with a little lorry firm, Lorry Thieves, from Canning Town. Driving around after night, looking for a lorry and a lay-by, open the back up, yeah, we'll have that. I was getting big money.
As simple as that?
Yeah. And how it come on top? Right-hand man. Yeah, proper grasped me up. Got 5.5 and fought my way through that. Wayland, Sea Cat, war man. I see two people murdered in Wayland and no one get charged for it. That's how it was. And Reg Cray called me over and said, I want you to meet this man. And it was Dave Bulney, and that's where I met him.
You got stabbed 7 times on 7 different occasions.
Yeah, with all my tragedies and all that, I'm so content, you know, with my life now. I don't know whether I'd say I went off the rails. I would say I just changed rails. My advice to anyone that ever finds himself in that position.
Welcome to the Eventful Lives podcast. I'm your host, Dodge, and I'm the founder of Bournemouth Sevens, the world's largest sport and music festival. On this podcast, I speak to proper characters of all lived eventful lives. Do us a favour and hit that follow button and be sure to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook and TikTok at Dodge Woodall, where we've now had over 100 million views. Ricky Carver was a notorious supercar thief and international drug smuggler. Nicknamed the criminal at school, Ricky talks through his stealing high-valued luxury cars, gangland warfare, and he's just released a book called Nightmares of an Essex Boy. This is the eventful life of Mr. Ricky Carver. Ricky, welcome to the show, mate.
Yeah, good to be here, mate. Been a long time.
It has been a long time.
Hasn't it? Quite excited.
Yeah, good view. Nice one flying over.
Yeah, it's good. And braving the cold. you know.
Let's roll all the way back, Ricky. Where did you grow up? And how did you end up writing a book, Nightmares of an Essex Boy?
Well, to be honest with you, my parents moved around a lot. Didn't have really a hard, what I would call a hard schooling. I had a good schooling. I had some hard schools. Grew up in East London. My parents tend to move about, and I kind of guess where my life kind of took the true path is we moved to a town called Great Dunmow in Essex, and that totally changed my mindset and all that. There was nice people. I've been used to East London schools that was fighting every day, you know. Unbelievable different in attitudes between East London.
Whereabouts were you in East London?
Bethnal Green. So obviously amongst all the names and faces, you know, grew up with them all. They done their thing, I kind of done my thing. But as I say, I moved out. My mother and father moved about a bit, and it was, I suppose. They see where it was all going, and we moved out, as I say, to an Essex town. Finished my school in a nice school in Great Dunmow. And it's funny, even at the school, it's funny how your path gets mapped out, because they used to call me Crim at school, short for criminal. And I often look back and I thought, Jesus, man, my path was set at that age. And I used to think, why on earth they used to call me criminal? Yeah. And all these years later,
that's why.
Well, there you go, you know. Obviously, I couldn't see it.
What were you like at school? So, 14, 15, 16, coming out?
Well, it was, when I moved to Dunmow, it was quite an experience, because I was a London boy out in the country, and all of a sudden everyone wanted to fight the London boy. I'm like, Jesus, I just want to be everyone's friend. I don't kind of upset no one. I'll work with you. If I don't like you, I won't talk to you. It's that simple. But it's kind of funny. You get a London boy, especially back in them days.
What are we talking here, 70s? 80s?
Yeah, early 70s. Yeah, yeah. You know, I was about 13, really early age, and they hadn't seen Londoners out there, you know, and Londoners didn't really start moving out until probably the 80s and all that.
What was your life then like growing up? And when did you start getting really naughty? What age?
Well, When we, in Dunmo, it was, I left school, good education. I weren't no angel, but I weren't nasty or nothing. Played my football, sports and normal stuff, you know. Done an apprenticeship in carpentry and joinery. Didn't like that. But I liked the college because there's birds everywhere. Mm. I thought, yeah, this is a bit of me. So I'm like, I'll do another course. So I went and done chefing. Thought, yeah, I'd have this. Yeah, I want to cook and actually like cooking.
Yeah.
And it actually, I'm glad I've done it because it stands me in good stead today. Mm. And then went in a few restaurants and it was very apparent, I guess, right from early days school, I weren't ever going to work for someone. I had to be the man. Always looking for the earner, me.
Yeah.
Obviously, a younger age.
What sort of age were you here?
I would have been early 20s.
What was your movements after that then for a pound note?
I was always, at that age, yeah. I was money motivated, yeah. For sure. Everything, and I just learned. It's kind of funny, you know, and you kind of, you grew up in the catering game and the pub game and you've made good and done very well. And you have to have a certain thing to be able to do that.
Hi guys, just giving you the quick heads up. We've just launched a new VIP membership on Patreon. This gives you exclusive episodes, behind the scenes footage never seen before, VIP community chat and early access to all episodes. If you love what we do, for the sake of a cheeky pint a month, fiver a month, come and support the channel. It allows us to grow even bigger.
It's not something someone can teach you. Mm. You've got it in you, and then you have to teach yourself, type of thing, but you've got it in you. Mm. And I always add, wherever I went, if I worked in a restaurant, I'm head chef within 2 months, you know? If I went to play football, I'd be the manager in 3 months, you know. You can't, you know, and I knew.
Where did you get this leadership from?
I don't know. I just knew at an early age, even at school.
Yeah.
I was the pace setter always, always. I was the one always pushing the line. And it's exciting, it's glamorous. You know, rather than just sit there and follow suit, that was never going to be me. Mm. That was never going to be me. Putting your ass on the line was exciting. Plenty of hardship. But even my hardships, I had a grin on my face, you know. I remember sitting in police cells and the coppers used to say, what are you grinning at? I'm like, grinning at what you've got to do later. And they'd be like, what have I got to do later? I said, you've got to clear my mess up. And they'd be in, what mess? And I used to smash the cell to pieces. First thing, when I used to get put in a police cell, first thing I'd do, right, kick the Kazi off, pull it up, so you got water pumping out everywhere. And you had glass bricks at the back, get it, do all the glass bricks, sit down and, oi, I can't stay in here, there's fucking water and glass everywhere. And I used to go mad. You're going in the next one. Well, I'd do the same. They would do you for criminal damage. And I'd be like, wow.
Mm.
What, twice, three times? I'd do them all. And used to put me in the interview room. I used to get out of the interview room. And I remember they let me have a shower one day at Loughton. And the window was open like that. And I could see all the car park. And I'm like, are they having a laugh? And I just climbed out the window and went home. Just silly shit like that. And just for the crack, you know, you're gonna, they're going to come and get you.
But where did you first get into trouble in your 20s?
That was my first thing was in Great Dunmo. Mm. And it was madness, absolute madness. We broke into the youth centre and stole the tin box. And I was like 15.
Mm.
Right, 15 years old. And I remember the copper coming round my house, sat us round, and we had a big round dinner table. My dad and my mum sat there. My mum was embarrassed. My dad kind of thought, couldn't work out where I'd gone wrong. My dad was a lorry driver. had about as much go in him as a fucking broken down Ford Escort, you know. Was going nowhere, slowly.
Yeah.
Whereas my mum was opposite. Mum was, you know, she got into the plastic surgery and went boom, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember this copper coming round my house, and I always remember his name. Sergeant Irons, a big staff, moustache like that. Sergeant Irons, what? Excuse my French, but Jesus. And he sat there in front of my dad and he said, Mr. and Mrs. Carver, I'll guarantee you your son will do a custodial sentence before he's 19 years old. I went, and I remember saying, oh, yeah, but you won't be the to nick me, because you're not that clever. Mm-hmm. You know, and my slap round the head from the old man, all that shit and all that. And do you know what? I was 18 and I had a fight in a club and ended up getting 6 months and in a DC or Ballstall. Was that the Ballstall? No, DC, detention centre.
Yeah.
Like army camp.
Yeah.
And do you know the one thing when the judge said 6 months, I'm like, fucking hell, that copper was right, you know.
Yeah.
I ain't even 19 yet, and he's right.
Yeah.
And that really hurt me. for, you know, and it's just funny, just how people know, you know, and it was kind of just coming back to where I was going, and I thought, I'm never gonna work for people. I will work for people, pick their brains, and then kind of right, I'm done now.
Yeah.
I can do that, Bosch, and always done it better. Always got on. You know, got into properties and stuff. Always had nice cars, motorbikes. Just wanted them.
You've earned a lot of dough in your time.
Fortunes.
When did we first meet?
We met in Estepona, but I was well at it by then.
2000.
I don't know whether I'd say I went off the rails. I would say I just changed rails and got on a faster track, if you like, or whatever. Define right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know, who am I to judge where a man gets his money from? But I left Dunmo and all the chefing thing. I went down to Clacton to do the takeaways. Ended up with four. Started with one, ended up with four in 2 years. Paying me fortunes.
Yeah.
Fucking hard work, mate.
Yeah, it's graft, isn't it?
18 hours a day.
7 days.
But after 2 years, I sat back, I'm thinking, Jesus, I'm fucked. I'm fucked and probably got about 50 kids. and definitely in 20 years' time, I'm going to be, they're going to be knocking on the door. But no, I was very lucky there, very careful, and haven't got kids everywhere, you know. But I kind of left, I remember leaving Clacton and my mate had just got a job for Merrill Lynch as a broker, was earning loads of money, old school mate from Dunmo. I was kind of milling about, looking for stuff to do. Ended up going Bobby Budd. Went in to set up a tarmac company. This fella was always in the pub down in the village where we all live, St. Joseph, Clacton. And he was a tarmacker. Always had a wad like that. And I'm like, fucking hell, Bob. Jesus, man. He went, tarmac game. He went, do you want to come work with me? I went, no. And I went away and I was thinking about it. And I'm like, Bob, I'm at a loose end. And I always had plenty of money for me, could sell anything. I said, listen, I ain't going to work for you. I don't be set up together. I'll go and sell it and you lay it. He went, you can do it. I went, just tell me what it's all about and I'll go and sell it. You're sodding about with, you tell me little soddy, little 3-ton driveways. I went, mate, the money ain't there. He went, I'd do all right. I said, yeah, but like, think bigger. So I'd started working with him. I had a little mini. And I used to go around. I was getting snooker car parks for him, pub car parks. And I remember coming back to him, meeting him one day. He said, got a car park. And he was like, oh, fucking hell. He went, how big is it? I went, it's about 60 ton. He went, fucking hell, how are we going to do that? I went, well, I ain't going to do it. You are. I went, I've sold it, haven't I? You got, and he used to hand lay.
Yeah.
3 ton driveways, all hand lay.
Yeah.
He went, that's a machine lay, 60 ton. I went, well, go and get a machine. Someone must hire them. Mm. Or phone fucking so-and-so up and he'll go and nick you one. Mm. And he went, we'll hire one. And we started hiring these machines and they were like 500 quid a day. Mm. So he was very lazy. Mm. Used to get up at, say, 7 o'clock and want to be finished by 12. When we started doing the machine lays, he had to work all day because it was 600 quid a day or 500 quid a day. You've got to get your value out of it. And we had fortunes. You put me in a company and I'll pick it up and I'll take it places. That's just my knack with anything I do. Look at the bar I got in Torremolinos. I took that bar years ago. Used to earn 600 a month, euros. I come out of that exactly 7 years ago, and I'll tell you why in a while. And when I come out of that, I was earning 30 grand a month, you know.
Turnover.
Yeah. I just add it from 600 a month, you know. I just add that. You have that drive.
You have that. No, yeah. You either got it or you ain't.
I mean, I would say you probably got it. Come from. I mean, I remember when I first met you in Estepona, you were kind of bouncing about clubs. You used to vaguely remember to talk about your father and you're kind of helping you out and look at you now. Mm. Bournemouth Sevens, your own podcast. Mm. Look at you, very set. You know,
thank
you look
you,
good.
Yeah, mate.
And hats off to you, really.
I think when we first met.
And you've done it the right way.
Yeah.
Which is 10 times harder than my way.
I agree.
But
those paths are very, very fine paths, by the way. Entrepreneur
and
criminality.
Mate.
The mindset is the same.
Absolutely.
You can go down that path, we can go that path. I'm glad I went down the proper path.
Yeah, you've got...
Because it's very easy to flip that path.
Absolutely, and that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember a mate saying to me once, because when you get in all your skullduggery, 1 minute you got a Merc Sports brand new, next minute you're phoning your mate up, I'll kiss a lift, I ain't got wheels, you know, because you've had to sell it. And same with your watches. 1 minute you're wearing a 50 grand watch. Didn't know what one I had on, but and the next minute you got a Timex, and that didn't bother me. It's all part of the game, you know. But the hardest route is the honest route.
Agreed.
I used to have old
but
mates.
What I've learned is the hardest route was the honest route, but there's more longevity in the hardest route. The quick hit, everyone I know, all the naughty people, you know,
they come
they come and go. Easy money earn, easy money go, right?
That's how it goes,
and you can't keep hundreds of thousands, half a bar,
not now,
a mil cash. Not you now. Can't keep that floating about. You've got to get rid.
And yeah,
that
maybe, years ago, you could use it. You know, I had a lot of property years ago until my last nicking, and then the confiscation orders took care of all
away,
that.
Yeah.
But I didn't give a fuck, man. The one most important commodity that the old Bill could never get from me is my brain.
That's my brain, yeah.
And
the mindset.
Take everything, mate. That's where.
Where were you when you got your big nicking?
Well, I moved from Dunmore. My mate got me up into the broker, Tim. Going to stay with him tomorrow. I'm still very good friends, school friend. I'm still very good friends with him. He said, listen, Dunmore, what the fuck you doing? He went, come back up here. He lived in Gants Hill at the time. So I went and stopped in his house in Gants Hill. Proper mates used to go out everywhere. Everyone used to think we were brothers. And from that, I started to meet proper people. I don't mean the brokers and all that, but I remember meeting a fella who you will all know. Probably my first biggest face I met was a fella called Stevie Young. Very well-known family. Obviously, his brother, the long fella, very powerful man, gentleman, absolutely gentleman, nice fella. But we all earn our money, how we earn our money. And that kind of Didn't go work with them because they were too powerful, too bigger than me, but kind of showed me a path. I'm like, they're all driving about in Mercs, wearing Rolexes, Louis Vuitton shoes, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, man. And I'm like, I'm going to work. And it's funny how it come round. I got in with a little lorry firm, Lorry Thieves, from Canning Town. And they just got wind with me, like, that geezer's, he's proper. He's proper. Meaning me, which is quite honour, really. And they said, do you want to come on a bit of work with us? I went, yeah, fuck it. What's the work? He said, well, we nick lorries. I went, was that it? They went, yeah, fella loads. I went, all right. I went, yeah. And they went, can you drive one? I went, well, it's only like driving a car, isn't it? Yeah, I'll drive one. Fuck it. I'll learn. It'll take me 5 minutes. I'll learn. My old man was a lorry driver, and I drove his lorry a couple of times just for the crack as a kid. I thought, yeah, I can drive these. I need like a car with a trailer, isn't it? So anyway, I got into that. The first load we nicked was 40 foot of fur coats. And I'm like, fucking hell. I went, I want one of these. No, you can't have one of them. We're fucking whatever. Took it to slaughter, slaughtered it, and that was that. Geezer come round my house with a big fat envelope, and I'm going back years.
What sort of year are we talking here? Roughly.
62, 72. Early 80s.
Early 80s,
And give me $8,000. And I went and bought a flat for five in Clacton. there's a flat. My mum lived down there. She said, you can buy a flat for that. And I remember buying a flat for $5,000. And still had $2,000 to go and spunk. I'm like, yeah, large. And I'm thinking, fucking hell. And then the next one came, then the next one came. And then I thought,
where were these lorries coming in from?
All like, we used to go and get them, Felixstowe, Harwich, lay-bys, yards.
And how would you plan it? What sort of planning were going to it?
Just
how many lads were on that bit of work?
Four of us.
Okay.
There's four of us.
Who was the brains behind it?
We had the Nose. I'm not going to name names, but we had the nicknames. We had Nose, the Nose, you know who he is. you had the Animal, nickname for obvious reasons. Yeah. Me, I was known as Bond because I was a smooth, literally that. I can't really name the other one because we're still good friends.
Yeah.
And he'd get the amp. Still good friends to this day. Lives out near me. And we got into doing all that, just driving around after night, looking for a lorry and a lay-by, open the back up. Yeah, we'll have that. Off to the slaughter. Warehouse, which was generally, could be anywhere, to be honest with you. Slaughter it, put it in our own one, and boom. So, you know, within a short spell of time, you know everyone that will buy something.
Give me an example of you nicking a lorry from the moment the plan to a geezer kipping in the, how's it work?
All it would be is, I mean, you'd go, someone would phone you up. I generally, it would be me and the Animal that used to go out and find them. We then had a driver, and then obviously the other one would go open the warehouse. Me and the Animal would take the load, and all it come to, we'd just for argument's sake, we'd slip in. I'll tell you a funny story, because it was hilarious. We've climbed up this wall, the Animal's jumped down, and I'm on the other side. I'm like, all right. And he's, yeah, sweet. Over you come, pitch black, down, place in Romford, container box, all right. I went, oh, sweet. He went, yeah, come up, scaled up the wall, jumped down, landed in about that much mud. And I had my new Timberlands on. And I looked at him and I went, you. He went, well, I've done it. I went, you. Mud everywhere. All of a sudden, this Rottweiler's come bowling over. Fucking great big Rottweiler. And we're looking like that, and he's just stopped short of the mud, growling at us. Fucking head like that. And I looked at him, I went, now we're fucked. And then this other little baby Rottweiler come running over, straight in the mud. In the mud, all over us. We're absolutely standing there, covered in mud. And we had a shoe load in there. We'd already clocked it for the shoes. That's my load. And that fucking dog ain't stopping me. So this little dog just wants to play. The other one kind of wants to eat us. So I went, I've got a plan. Look, car over there. We kind of work our way over, see if it's open. Go through the car, let the dog chase us, shut the door and lock it in the car. And that's what we done, and it worked. And we were like, fucking hell. And this other little loony was fucking jumping all over us. Anyway, we've got the lorry, opened the lorry, got the shoe. Yeah, we're having this. Gates open, always had croppers, the equipment. Off we go. And it was quite funny. The animal turned around and said, I'm having that dog, the little one.
Yeah.
He went, he said, blind, threw it in the back of the lorry and took the dog. And all. Called it Lucky. Had it for years, you know. It was funny. And
Was in the lorries then? Who was in the lorries at the time? But was there people driving the lorries? Did you pull
people
over?
No, I mean, no. Generally, no.
Do you have to knock people out? Do you have to get... No.
That's what they call jump-ups.
Yeah.
We never used to do that. I weren't that kind of criminal.
Mm.
I never was nasty, never hurt no one. Probably out of all it, one lorry driver, because he hit me over there with a tyre lever.
Hit you over there with a what?
A tyre lever. You ain't having my load. Crack. My two mates were laughing their head off. I fucking got claret pouring out my head. I went, what are you laughing at? They were, it's funny. And I said to the lawyer, I said, listen, it's not your fucking load. It's ours now. I went, you hit me with that again, you're getting fucking hurt. He went, I've got to do the lot of you. So we had to manhandle him, tie him up, and didn't hurt him, no, yeah. Just tied him up. And mate, I still get ribbed about that today, you know. But no, we never hurt no one. Yeah. We wanted the load.
Who would you flog the load? On the slaughter, you take the lorry straight back into warehouse. Would you have someone teed up to buy all the gear straight away?
We had contacts. Yeah. Like, if you take that, we all used to say, Packy Bill will have that. Yeah. that's for him. Or Big Joe or you know... We had buyers. Yeah. There weren't nothing that we couldn't
get.
Did
you ever get caught?
No. The lorry should have kept at it because it was such a safe thing. And but what they done with the lorries, they upped the ante, the old Bill. If you get caught, if you got caught nicking a lorry, you just get 18 months, 9 months.
Mm.
You're out. 4 months open. So 4 months you're out.
Yeah.
So there was no deterrent, but we never got caught anyway. But they upped the ante to 10 years. Because it was so rife.
Yeah.
So we all looked at each other and thought, I'm about done on that now, 10 years. I'm taking 10 years for a load, you know. They're not that high value. Mm. Used to nick 50 grand, 100 grand, 20 grand even, you know. But good night's work, you know, whatever way it was, and give you a nice living. Mm. But, yeah, everything was, I remember nicking a Timberland lorry once, Timberland boots. Opened them all up and they're all left feet. And we thought, oh, fucking hell. You know, and the company started getting wise. Send all the left feet in
truck.
That one and feet goes in that. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we had a load of Power Rangers when it's funny, I know all these things, but you had a new Ranger come out, the White Ranger. People like, Jesus, I remember that. How do you know about that? And because we were still quite old. And we opened this lorry up and it's the White Ranger, just come out. 79.95, lovely, 44, it's a good load, took it. I can't remember who made it, but whatever company made it, they put it down at 9.99. So we'd gone and sold this load to a fella who'd give us like 20 quids, and now you can go and buy them for 99. And we're like, fuck you, Neil, had to give him his money back. you used to get all shit like that. Yeah. Nicked a lorry load of, I don't know, trainers, Reeboks. Mm. Got a phone call, went, here, listen, you might be able to help me. My pal's got a gaff, so-and-so, so-and-so. He's had a trailer load of trainers nicked. I went, Reeboks? He went, yeah. He went, I've got them. I went, who's the geezer? He went, he's just a mate of mine. You've ruined him. I went, really? He went, he's offered a 10 grand reward. I went, I can go and get 80 grand for the load. He went, is a mate of yours? He went, yeah. I went, all right, listen, I'm going to put it back Saturday night, tell him not to be anywhere around, that if we see him, going to wrap him up and take the load, he'll never see it. I go and put it back for him. Went and put it back for him.
Yeah,
you know, so that's the type of thing. A couple of my pals didn't agree with that, but I went, listen, fucking ain't in this game to ruin people, you know. So I did have art, you know.
Where did it move on to from there?
From the lorries, yeah. It kind of, I then got into the cars.
If they're putting on you, if they're putting 10 years on you, you're going to step back.
You're
and
out,
hold on,
I'm out.
So, I'm out, yeah.
We had our own lorry company at that stage, because we had a salesman that used to go and get us contracts for people like Currys and all that, and we used to nick our own loads. Used to like nick up a dozen loads and then lose the contract, which was cool. Change the name of the firm and then go and get Giorgio Armani, you know, and nick a few of our own loads, and they go, oh, you ain't having no more loads. I went, oh, that's sweet, fuck yeah. We end up giving the firm to the nose, and he run it. Lee, we used to go up there and there would be Curry lorries sitting in our yard, and I'm like, why haven't you told us about them? He went, oh, you can't nick them. What are you fucking on about? They were our loads. And it got like that. And he got all honest and kind of lorry firm tycoon, if you like. Yeah, and so we said, oh, fuck it, have the firm.
Yeah.
And we move on. And we ended up, went into Puff game then, shipping Puff.
What rough year was that?
The Puff game would have been 90s, you know, and... No, probably later than that, or maybe started about that. And that's when I kind of met you. I was in that game.
Oh, yeah.
That was the game, that was my main earner when I met you. I remember I met you around the pool, didn't I?
I was out there on holiday and we bumped into each other, weren't we?
Yeah,
we both like got chatting. Who are you? You West Ham? I'm West Ham. And we're just off having the right laugh,
yeah,
wasn't
I remember it? got it straight off, didn't we?
Yeah. And, I think you just come out of Nick then.
Quite possibly. Yeah. I just wrote the book. That's so fine. Yeah, it would have.
So did you go into the car game or the Puff game first?
No, the car game really materialised from the Puff, and I was doing both because we had a farm. I had a farm out in Essex, and I was shipping Porsches to South Africa, putting them on the staff. Had the police commissioner on the firm, all the customs sorted, shipping them out to South Africa. Putting them on the South African motoring system and then importing them back as South African imports and listing them with DVLC and doing very nicely out of it.
So you were nicking, were you nicking Porsches or other people nicking for you?
I had little bods and it's like anything I'd do. And it's what I was saying about the lorries or with the lorries it happened. You know, I got invited onto the work. 3 months later, I'm like, Jesus, what's this fucking firm doing? Ain't got a clue, you know. Ain't got a clue how to get buyers. So I kind of made my own little firm, really. I weren't the main man, but here go work. And then we used to earn loads of money because I used to think, you know, and it was same with a car game. I sodded about with certain people in the car game, and I'm thinking, Jesus, mate, these people are blind. They ain't got a clue. So they were fucking about with Mercs and Faultieras and shit. And I'm like, why the fuck, you know? No, I'm going, Jesus, I see that market. I'm like, right, I want Porsches. So you get a little firm, they go out and get your Porsches. And I remember my mum's boyfriend at the time was a director of Porsche UK out in Reading. And I thought, fucking hell, I've got to get into this, bud. I was sending transporters into Porsche UK, Reading. They were loading them up brand new. I don't know how they were losing them. But I didn't care. And I was sending them, and that went on for ages. And he then resigned. And So that angle stopped. My mother's next boyfriend.
What was the angle there, though? You said you get the Porsches, send them out of South Africa.
Well, it was getting stolen Porsches.
Stolen Porsches?
Cost fuck all.
Yeah.
Sending them out to South Africa.
Why?
Because we were putting them on the South African motoring system.
Okay.
Which legaled them up.
Oh, and then bring them back again.
And then we were exporting a South African Porsche to the UK.
So we get stamped as a South African Porsche. Oh, okay.
And listing them on DVLC. And going getting 40 grand for them as imports, opposed to 500 quid
right,
stolen.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
How long were you doing that for?
I went on for a couple of years, smashed it with that. And from that, I got into the Mercs. My mother come over with another boyfriend. My mother was into the plastic surgery, so she had her own office out in Benoos. So she met a lot of wealthy clients. Got into... her and the old man were done. And she come home, she said, oh, he's managing director of Mercedes. I went, wow, there's an angle. I always looked at that. And I remember going to lunch for him and we were chatting about, I said, I'm into my cars and all that. And I said, I keep getting them stolen. What a fucking pain. And this geezer, it's a big, big man in Mercedes, said, see that? Said, a car thief would love it. He had this key. He said, that'll open any, the new SLs had just come out. He said, you can just open any SL. It's a universal key. I'm like, wow, got to have that. He went to the toilet. Key's on the table. I'm fucking having that. Took it off his key ring. Said to my mother, I'm out of here. She went, what you just done now? I said, have it. Tell him if he wants it, tell him to come and get it. And I just took it, man, and cleaned the market, mate. I was the only man that could get the SLs. I used to go straight up the city. Yeah, here's one, boom, boom, off. You know, I was getting big money
for them. As simple as that?
Yeah, I was getting big money for them because no one could get them. Mm. And I remember a news program. It's on the news. I'd altered the percentage of stolen Mercedes in the land. I added 2 or 3% to it. And I was right proud of that. I thought, yeah, fucking hell, that's me. You know, quite funny, really. And and you just, the car game, you meet a lot of people of the wrong type or the right type, whichever way you look at it. And it opens doors. And the one big thing with me is I had a sound reputation. If you want to fight, I'll have a fight, you know. If I get nicked, see you whenever, you know. Never used to put nothing. Never give no one nothing. Old Bill used to go, you nick, blah, blah, blah. Used to sit in the cell, type lit, that's it, do what you got to do. You know my name, that's all you need to know, whatever. And to be honest, you've got to have a lot of stuff because of that. Most people get nicked and sent to jail. Simply because what they say.
Yeah.
So that's simple logic. Don't say nothing and they're fucked. The old people don't know nothing. They only know what you tell them or if you get a grass come up, which is what got me eventually.
How did you get nicked?
Right hand man. You know, took him in. Proper man. Yeah, proper grassed me up. Was found out. Had all the debts. Had his statements. Thought you dog earned him a lot of money, man. Grass me up.
What year are we talking?
And then had the front to come and knock on my door when we come out.
Did he get banged up as well?
No, he got off. The only person went for that swindle was me. And
what year was this?
92, because I come out 98. Got 5.5 and fought my way through that. And that's where that come from.
Nightmares of an Essex
Nightmares
boy.
Nightmares of an Essex boy was a jail yarn.
So you got a 5.5. How long did you do it at 5.5?
3.5. Should have done 2.5, but because of my attitude and I wouldn't say it's a bad attitude, but I have morals and ethics, and just because I went in them sort of places doesn't mean to say I have to sacrifice my morals and ethics. And horrible place, you know.
How was it for you then?
I went from a nice house in Chigwell to an 8x4 shithole with people. And I don't mean it disrespectfully, but I just wouldn't mix with them people. You're the same. a certain level of people you just wouldn't mix with. They're not your cup of tea. Mm. And you have to in there, you know, I'm talking heroin addicts around you, the stench of heroin everywhere, horrible, you know, nicking off of everyone, you know. What a nice experience, to be honest with you.
How old were you when you went in? 30?
In my 30s, yeah. Older 30s, yeah. You know, and it just, long time ago, a lot of water under the bridge there.
What was it like with that moment when he said you got 5.5 for you when you're standing in the dock?
Oh, mate, I was like, Jesus, man, is he talking to me or what? I remember my barrister said you're looking at about 18 months because how you've been with the old Bill. I was a, you know, I was a fucker with the old Bill. You know, and I always was from my football days as well. I used to love fighting them. It was such a fucking buzz to watch a copper collapse. Anyone will tell you that. I remember my mate saying it's better than sex. And I said, you're having sex with the wrong people. you know, but no, it's a buzz.
And, did you go home and away, West Ham?
Yeah, everywhere. Mm. Loved it. Yeah, loved it. And got away at some missions, man. Mm. Snow, blizzards, escort vans, yeah. Fucking... depending on where I was in life, you know, and I had some cracks with the football. Got to know a few of the players as well. Ian Bishop, good mate. Johnny Moncur.
Funny bloke, Johnny Moncur,
yeah,
right?
Good, out of land. He's nice, John. Yeah. Good golfer, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they all are, in all fairness. Bish funny.
Yeah.
I was heading through life the wrong side of the fence, earning plenty of money.
Did it ever come on top, though? You earning all this dough, all the cars coming through you, the path.
No.
Did it ever come on top?
Just no, because I was just clever.
So how did you, you said like you're always one step, but how did you actually get nicked then?
Unbelievable.
Go on.
Unbelievable. And I sometimes look back on that now and I think, Jesus, what a plonker.
Mm.
If basically a pint of milk and loaf of bread got me 5.5 years. If I hadn't gone for a loaf of bread and a pint of milk that morning, that book, Nightmares of an Essex Boy, would never have been wrote. And basically what it was, I lived in Loughton. I kind of had a routine. Used to get up in the morning, used to love fresh milk and fresh bread.
Mm.
Then I used to go off to the gym. So coming back from the gym, went and got me fresh bread and milk in Loughton. Was going along what they call the Mad Mile, the back of Epping. Lived in Loughton at the time. And this year, I had a Volkswagen Ottinger, and it was two-tone, black and white. And it's funny, I got one now, but I've got the Mark V now. Mm. They're quite rare. Mm. That one was the Mark II.
Mm.
Everyone wanted it, because it cost me a lot of money then, you know, because they're very rare. It's going along the Mad Mile, 40 mile an hour, with my loaf of bread and pint of milk, going to go home. And this banana yellow Volkswagen Corrada come fucking hacking by me the other way. And I'm like, wow, mine was very distinctive because it was white on top and black on bottom, BBSs and all that, and the Ottinger had its own style. Mm. And I looked in the mirror and all of a sudden I see this banana yellow do an handbrake. Along the Mad Mile, come up behind me and started flashing his lights. I looked in the mirror, it's this little car thief who I used to use in the past. Mm. I thought, fucking hell, that's Efi. So that's nicked. He's flashing his lights all over me. So I thought, fuck it, time to put the Ottinger in gear and a quick car. Mm. Bang, 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 and lost him. Went round to the back of my flat, parked up with a car park, back of the post office. I lived above the post office at the time. All gone. And I thought, oh, that's Andy. All of a sudden, I've heard, he's come round the bend, round the back, and in the car park. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, it's all I need. He's got out of the car, he's like, he's one of them.
Yeah.
Ricky, in it, you know? Baseball cap ran the wrong way, that and big puffer jacket, that type of fella.
Yeah.
I'm like, Efi, what the fuck are you doing? He went, you want to buy it? I went, no, I don't want to buy it. I went, I've got me light with bread and pint of milk, fuck off. And I just look round, and there's old Bill everywhere, plain clothes. And I look round, I was looking everywhere. I went, Efi, listen to me. He's like, I went, Efi, shut up, shut up. I went, there is old Bill everywhere. You must have been followed. Oh, I went, this is on top. And with that, they've come out everywhere. Because Loughton Police Station was only like 100 yards away. Mm. So they've obviously, someone's got on the radio and it's all come up. Nicked us. We're nicking you. You're under arrest for stealing two high-profile Volkswagens. I went, what are you talking about? Mm. I mean, it's mine. He went, that's your car. I went, that's my car. Check it out, it's my car. He went, who's that? I went, I don't know. I weren't driving that. You must have seen that. Where you go? Hands out, we're going to cuff you, Loughton Police Station. I went, you ain't cuffing me. I went, you want me to come to Loughton Police Station? I'll go. It's only there, I'll walk there. Oh, we've got to cuff you, you're under arrest. I went, listen, up to you. You're not cuffing me. Try and cuff me, I'll fight you. That simple. Mm. Or I'll walk there with you. All right, walk in front of us. If you try and run, I went, mate, my car's there, my flat's there. Where am I going to run? Mm. Let's go. I went, Efi, you're in fucking trouble. Sorry. I went, no, don't wear that with me. I've got in the back of Loughton Police Station. He said, right, what's going on? I went, Efi, listen, all I want you to do, right, is tell the absolute truth. Mm. From the moment you've done your handbrake. That's all I want you to do, all right? And I'm done with you. Defer from all that, you're fucking getting it. And the police, don't start threatening him. I said, and you, if you don't shut up, you'll fucking get it and all. I don't need to be in here. I've got fresh bread in the back of my car going cold, you know? And I was always like that, you know? And so anyway, they've checked it out. Yeah, that's his car. They went, do you know this man? I went, yeah. It's a little fuck from Walthamstow. Mm. You know the rest. He went, well, why did he meet you? I went, ask him. I don't know. He's not obviously not my friend. You know, I don't do all the baseball caps that way. I wear mine the proper way. Anyway, they were quite satisfied. And they went, yeah, well, right, we're going to release you for further investigations. And I thought, well, that's it, because clearly done nothing wrong. And you had another copper come down. And the farm at Waltham Abbey with all the stolen horses and all that, I mean, that had been going for a while. That was all on top. It all come on top. And it was on all the 6 o'clock news, 10 o'clock news at the time. And they were looking for two characters, Ricky from Loughton and Mick from Loughton. Anyway, this copper's come down and he's like, what's going on, Sarge? Oh, these two with stolen cars and blah, we're about to let them go and all that. And he's looked and he's reading, he's gone, Ricky from Loughton. And the minute he said them words, I'm like, oh, fuck. I knew exactly what he was on about because that's what they'd done on the news. Mm. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I'm like, you know, acting normal. He's gone, and I could hear him, Ricky from Loughton. That rings a bell. And I stood up, I went, listen, you can ring whatever fucking bells you want, right? I've had enough of this. Give me the papers, I'm out of here. You know? You know I ain't a stolen car. And he said, can you wait half hour, Sarge? Come back down. And he said, know anything about a farm in Waltham Abbey? I went, and I thought, I'm fucked. I'm like, what are you on about? I went, what the fuck are you on about? I went, I've just been nicked for a fucking, in my own Volkswagen Golf, in the back of the Loughton post office, and you're going on about some farm in Waltham Abbey. What the fuck you on, mate? And he went, I'm arresting you, suspicion of stolen motor cars, and blah, blah, blah. I went, are you fucking lost the plot? And then we'd done it, charged me with that, and that started all the case. Searched my house. Obviously nothing in my house. You know, and that was quite funny. And when were you searching my house for? And I was like, no stolen Porsches under that bitch, you know. you know, and
how long did the case go on for?
2 years.
It went on for two years, did it?
I fucked
Why
him.
So long?
I fucked him in every angle. I had properties. I thought, they go, this is on top. And then I got, then the grass come into it. And I didn't know at this point. And I'm like,
you say the grass comes up. Were you on work with him?
Yeah, I was still working with him. Okay. An hour it come on top. An hour I worked it out who it was. My mates had already told me who it was, but I wouldn't have it because I'm working with him. And if I'm working with you, I'll protect you 1,000,000%. They searched my house one day and I had stashes everywhere for money and good stashes. You'd never find. And this copper come in, went straight to two of these stashes.
And knew straight away.
And I'm like, wow, you've not even looked. You've just gone there. And there's two people that knew about them statues. I'm like, wow, it's him. Wow. So I had a word with the animal. And the animal said, I fucking told you.
Well, he gave the heads up.
And the animal went, and I went, listen, he went straight to them statues. And the animal was like, fuck me, man. They were good ones. I would never have thought of them in a million years. Yeah. And the animal was the most fucking devious, slippery funk you could ever meet. You know, and he went, well, there's your answer then. He said, there is your answer.
Did you get warned about this fella before?
No. Nothing at all. I've known him for years. I went, no way, that was luck. And the animal's like, ain't luck, man. There's your answer. Accepted it. I got my thing, got me lump of bird. And I remember I got decatted down. And I met this really high society geezer in the decat and kind of looked after him a little bit, to be honest with you, because he's getting a little bit bullied. He ended up getting banged up with me, so I kind of looked after him because you can't bully my roommate, otherwise it comes on me. So that caused a few problems. But
what were you like, Nick?
Depends which one it was.
When you did the five and a half, what were you like?
Depends what Nick you was in.
Which is the toughest one for you?
Wayland Sea Cat. Oh man, that.
Where is that in the country?
That was in Thetford. Norfolk or Suffolk.
Okay.
Norfolk. That was the hardest experience of my whole fucking life.
How long are you there for?
Two.
Okay.
Jesus, man.
Give me an example of why it was so hard, Rick.
Racial shit. Okay. And brains v. brawn. I pit my wits against all the heroin addicts. I used to earn like $2,000 or $3,000 a week, you know, and the Jamaicans and all that didn't like it. But there's not a lot they could do about it, you know. I want a fight, I'll have a fucking fight, you know. Got stabbed 7 times in Wayland.
In one hit?
No.
Different occasions?
Yeah, I'm still here, you know.
What sort of character were you, Rick, in Nick then? Because you're
pure animal, mate.
You were?
Pure animal. I remember my mother coming up and seeing me one day, and she's like, Jesus, what have you turned into?
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, mother, you've got to survive here, you know. I can't be fucking, you know, there's no Savoy in here, you know. This is pure Oliver Twist shit, you know. Some nasty characters. And scenario, I see two people murdered in Wayland. You know, and no one get charged for it. That's how it was. No one grasses up in there, or you're fucked, or you'll be number three. You know, that's how it works. Horrible place, horrible level of people. I finally got decated out to.
Hold on. I want to dig a bit deeper in this.
Yeah,
you got stabbed 7 times on 7 different occasions.
Yeah,
with what?
Pencils. Pens. I remember a geezer, fucking hell, I had a row with this black geezer one day, come in my cell with a, you know, the old fly mode, the blades.
Yeah.
Took one of them off, obviously shafting that like a fucking axe. Come in with that. Because he's gone like that. I was a bit gutted, to be honest. I had a Parker pen that I used to write for England, hence the book. And as he's lifted it up, I grabbed me Parker pen and just stuck it in his eyeball, pushed him out and gone, aye, aye. You know, and that took care of that, you know, and because of his injury, he got shipped. But if he'd caught me off guard, mate, he would have chopped me and silly shit like that. And I had a row with about six of them, racial thing.
With who?
Six brothers or whatever you got. I don't want to call them the obvious because everyone, I'm not a racist person. I don't care what colour you are, where you come from and all that. If you're good, you're good. If you're bad, you're bad. And you get called accordingly, you know, and that's how it is. You know, that's how I grew up. That comes from Bethnal Green and all that. And there's big racial tensions in jails, Asians, blacks, whites as well. Everyone, Turks nasty, you know, and it's gangland in there and it's naughty. You've got all the Asians converting the weak white men to Muslim. You imagine an Asian trying to convert me to a Muslim. What the fuck? You know, it's going off.
Yeah.
And then all the Asians will stick together. None of the whites will. Yeah, the white men's are the heroes, one man heroes, you know. Shame.
Was there a time you got plunged so bad you thought it could be over?
Not inside, that was outside. I've been stabbed 11 times in my life. And it's funny, all this shit I've been through, you know. I've had some battles, you know, not particularly unfair, but I'm not going to battle the wanker. I battle Billy Big Bollocks and the Nutter, you know. That's what I'm about. You battle a wanker, you're a wanker, you're a bully, you know. There's no mileage in that. And you couldn't upset me, you know. I'll only, you front me and touch me, it's off. Call me whatever you want, don't care. You know, when words finish, if words finish, then obviously bomb. But I'm a fighter. Everyone knows I'm a fighter. But I'm not like, I'm not someone like, say, Colton Leach, who you've had on here, you know, hard man. And I think I heard Dave Courtney say he could pull up like 15,000 people to fight with him. Well, I actually think Dave Courtney is well wrong there because I think he could probably pull up 30,000 people. that type of character is, I've met him a few times, but not, only in people's company, so it's unlikely he would kind of know me or remember me. But, mate, that man has got a lot of respect, so you've got to give him that. The other one, God rest his soul, you've probably heard all the stories, so you've got to make your own shit up like that. I don't put a dead man down. Earn his money how he earned his money, and good luck to him, and we're all different, you know.
Funny man.
Yeah,
he's got to give that, Dave as a funny
mate,
man.
Mate, I met him in Wayland. I met him in Wayland jail on a visit. He was visiting Reg Cray. And Reg Cray called me over and said, I want you to meet this man. And it was Dave Courtney. And that's where I met him and shook his hand, had nice words, didn't really know him. Heard a lot of stories. But I don't really listen to stories. It's, if it don't come out of the horse's mouth, it don't matter. Because if someone don't like you, they're gonna tell stories. And I would say someone like Dave Courtney had a lot of people that didn't like him. Probably from his success. You know, and whether I liked how he earned his money or not, it's not my business. And he was a character, wasn't he? Same as Colton Leach, proper character, legend with the West Ham. So I would love to have known him probably as a mate because he has got legendary status. But that was me.
Where did you get married? What year was
that? Well, that was funny. That was I'd come to Spain, hadn't I? And Spain really is where my life really went down the righteous route. And I remember my best mate Tim saying, just come out of Nick, broke his heart because we were like brothers and he lost his mate for a few years. And I remember him, he come and pick me up and he said, I'm going to say it, but you know it. He went, life's got to change. I went, absolutely.
He said that to you, did he?
Yeah. Okay. He said, I lost me mate, man.
Yeah.
And look at you. I can feel the car fucking shaking. When you've got to get this out. I went, yeah, I'll be all right. He said, do you know what? He said, cast your memory back. He went, whenever did you have a good life and earn loads of money? I went, when I used to do honest things, restaurants and all that. He went, so what the fuck you doing? And it's like what you said earlier, all these wide boys, they will end up with nothing. It's because they're spenders opposed to lack of brains, because they're clever and brave, but they're spenders and they're in that culture. And I was never a spender. I used to do the graft for the buzz. I didn't give a fuck what was in the back of the lorry. I nicked the lorry and got away with it. Let's see what's in the back. But we never used to nick blind, you know. But
What triggered you? What triggered you to actually finalise this after all these years?
Well, it's mad. That then had a meeting with Penguin, didn't like the fella, thought, fuck it, put it to bed. Done a two-book deal, Nightmares of an Essex Boy and Sweet Dreams of an Essex Boy. Sweet Dreams never been wrote, but I'm thinking about doing it now because of what's happening with it. And came to Spain. Finished the book, put it to bed, looking for something to do. Remember meeting you. Estepona was my first port of call. Still milling about, fucking about with a puff a little bit. And it was mad, really. And had a few quid, earned a few quid, but not a fortune, but enough to cushion me, you know. And then I met Elena, this Spanish girl. Just mad. Just went into, back in them days, you didn't have all the internet and all that shit. So you probably remember you had internet cafes everywhere. Went into this internet cafe, and this beautiful blonde girl was sitting on a stool having half a lager. And I looked at her, and I'm like, wow, that's a salt. I went, hola, you know? And she went, hello. I went, oh, you speak English? She went, yeah, I'm an English teacher. I went, oh, you could probably teach me a thing or two. And in the internet cafe I used to use, which was her cousin, Miguel, got chatting and all that. And I just said to her, do you fancy going out for dinner? And she said, yeah. And it all went from there and kind of fell in love. And I kind of thought, right, I've got a school teacher here. Can't be shipping fucking puff. Got the most honest family on the planet. I've never met people more honest.
Well, her family.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Lovely.
Yeah.
But refreshing. All doing well, you know. Two of the loveliest sister-in-laws you could ever wish for. I just couldn't, even to this day, hardcore. With my boys and all that, and ended up getting married in Coin, big church wedding.
Yeah,
and
lovely
and
Coin, yeah.
At 500 people. And I remember saying to Elena, I said, is anyone going to come that I'll know? You know, and obviously Stevie comes, my best man. Yeah. I had a few other pals. A lovely wedding, went to Lake Como for the honeymoon, Venice and that, and I always remember at Venice, Elena fell down, it's an omen, she fell down these stairs on one of the bridges. And at the bottom of the stairs, there was a big hammer's graffiti on the wall. I went, oh, look. And she said, I've just fallen over and you're fucking pointing at a set of hammers. I went, it's West Ham. She went, I'm fucking on the floor in this puddle. And I'm like, oh, it's funny. And these geezer come and helped her. I went, I'll fucking help her up. And that was funny. She said, bloody hammers. I went, what's hammers? We're in Venice. Jump in the paddle. I thought you fell over. And it was fun. And we just, if you look at our personalities, or not our personalities, our upbringings, chalk and cheese. But mate, we've got on so well. Yeah. And that's loyalty. You get that from Spanish. They're one men, women, you know, get a man and that's it. And I'm the same. And always, people often used to say to me, you ever going to have kids? I said, only with the person I will spend the rest of my life with. And I met her and I knew I want to spend the rest of my life with this woman, but I can't fuck about. I've got to do something. So, and that's how I ended up getting a bar in Torremolinos.
Going straight.
And was a buzz turning that in for from a shit earner to a major earner. Yeah. And the laughs I had in that bar were incredible. I've turned it into a sports bar.
Yeah. What's the name?
The Eat and Drink.
Yeah.
And that comes from a Chinese in EC1. Mm. I don't know whether you ever knew it. There's a famous Chinese. It's not there no more. It was called the Eat and Drink. All the brokers used to go there. Yeah. I like fucked up, and he used to do the Elvis impression.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all shook. These little Chinaman used to come out as Elvis Presley. It's called the Eat and Drink. And when I got it, I thought, I'm going to name it after that because that was such happy memories. I used to go there with some brokers. I called it the Eat and Drink and grafted it over the years. And me and Elena got closer and closer, got married and got two lovely boys, 16 and 14 now. And
are the names?
Ricardo and Sebastian. Yeah. Ricardo after me and Sebastian after my father-in-law, God rest his soul. Yeah. Lost him 2 years ago. And it's funny. And got married and had the babies and we're all happy family. And all my life, it's like you get there and bosh, something always knocks you off your fucking feet.
Yeah.
And as everything was going along sweetly, the bar was earning loads of money, we was having our nice holidays, averagely nice cars. Life was sweet.
Yeah.
And I just remember one morning I got up, fucking incredible, to be honest, yeah, incredible. Walked into the kitchen and see my wife on the floor. And I remember looking under the table. She went, "What are you looking at?" I went, "I'm looking for the hammers." You know, and we both remembered that incident in Venice. And I said, "What are you doing?" She went, "I don't know, I just fell over." I went, "You're in the middle of the kitchen. How did you just fall over?" So I picked her up, went, "You all right?" She went, "Yeah, fine." Chatting and that, cup of tea and that. And I looked at her and I went, "You're slurring a bit." I went, "Do you not notice that?" She went, "I just got up." I went, "You sound pissed." She went, "I just got up, I'm tired." I went, "All right, I'm getting ready and all that." She's wrote me a note. She said, "Can you get me a few bits and bring them back later?" I went, "Yeah." Looked at the list, and Ricardo was like 10 at the time, or 9 or something. 9, it would have been 9. And I looked at it, and Sebastian, 7. I went, "Who wrote that, Sebastian?" She went, "No, I've done it." And it was like very poorly written. And I'm like, "Oh," she said, "You understand it?" I went, "Yeah, got it." Doing about, and then I looked at her and she was slurring. And I'm like, "You right?" She went, "I feel funny, you know." I went, "Right, all right." So I phoned her sister up. I said, "Maria, get round here, will you? Lena's feeling, I don't know, you know, your sister, get round here, will you?" She's come round and you could see her concern. So I said, I'm going, said, you go to work, I'm going to take her to the hospital. I went, "All right, fair comment." So I went to work, took her to hospital, got a phone call at work and said, "Elena's been transferred from Coyne Hospital to Malaga." Said, "Elena's in Malaga." I went, "All right." Said, "They're doing all tests on her." I went, "All right, I'm on my way." She said, no, "They're just doing tests. She's going to keep her in. You go and get the kids and all that." I went, "Okay." So, and I went the next day, and she'd got the results. And that she had shadows on her lungs. And it was like, whew, totally knocked the stuffing out of me. It was like, wow, fucking hell, wow. And kind of sat there, all the family were there. And then obviously all the tests went on, cancer of the lungs. And I was like, fucking hell, Jesus, did not need this. She obviously had to give up work.
How old was she at this time?
40, 41.
Okay.
Had to give up work, which was our passion, English teacher. And just, I mean, I don't know, give up her life, basically. I've never seen anything like it, to be honest with you. I hear people, but if you don't experience that, you don't know. Mm. But that's not your fault, you know. Anyway, as the treatment went on, chemo started, radio, she then got a tumour on the brain. And I'm like, fucking hell, does it get any worse? And I always used to say to her, listen, we've got an hard 2 years now, got a really a hard 2 years, but you're 41. You know, they cure everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember the real nail in the coffin. I remember going to see a doctor with her for an update and all that. And the doctor was chatting and the doctor said, do you want to see the x-rays we've just done? She went, she's got shadows on her lung. I'm like, yeah, go on in. And she showed me the x-ray of the lungs and I'm like, fucking hell, I went, you call that a shadow? She went, yeah. I went, where the fuck's a shadow? That's everywhere. She went, technical term. I went, Jesus, there's nothing technical, totally black. Both of them. I'm like, whoa. And I said to her, what stage is that? And I'd been reading about all the cancers and all that. Stage one, you'll probably get over it. Stage two, you'll probably get over it. Stage three, 50-50 if you're strong, you got a chance. Stage four, you're dead. Stage five, say goodbye, everyone, you know? And she turned around and said, it's stage four. And I'm like, oh. And I was reading all the stats, 100% stage four, die. And I'm like, and I remember that stat. And I'm like, whoa, stage four. She went, yeah. And I looked at the doctor and we kind of knew. And I'm, that's it, isn't it? It's fucked. And I looked at Elena and I was like, unbelievable, no words, you know? And I walked out there numb and knocked the fight out of me. And and then we had to go through all the fucking destruction of a human body, you know, from the brain tumour, awful. Cut her head open, took it out. Complete success, the operation. 3 months later, she fucking died. So I remember seeing a surgeon in the hospital later when I went up to see her father-in-law, proper put it on him. Said, I see on your website about all the fucking complete success. She died. Defined success, you know. And yeah, very sad. And very difficult, you know, 7 years ago now, my boys are 16, 14.
How did your two boys deal with it?
Dodge, mate, I swear to God. She was in a hospice for the last 10 months, and I watch her deteriorate. The boys, she didn't want the boys to come up and see her because she was all bloated from the drugs. Whereas before, she was lovely and slim and beautiful. I think you met Elena.
Yeah.
Well, she was like that.
Yeah.
You know, in the end, from all the steroids and all that. So she didn't want her boys. And I said one day, fuck it. They wanted to see their mum. So I took them up. Ricardo was dumbstruck. Like, just no words. Sebi walked out. That's not my mum. I want to see mummy. And district, oh, man. So I took a moment, that was that. But at least Elena see her babies. And then slowly see her go down. And then drop, finally, ultimately, you know, I was there obviously all the time. My sister-in-laws used to take care of the babies. Died in my arms, man, in a coma. And can't explain to you. And
There's no words can put it into explanation.
No, you can't. It was like, you're just incredible. And then obviously 10, 15, 20 minutes later, I had to let her go, and they have to do their stuff. And I thought, right, I've got to get home. I need to be with my babies, man. And they rang my sister-in-law. So I phoned her up. And I went, she's got Susanna. She's gone, man. She's like, wow. She said, do you want me to tell? I went, no, I've got to tell them. Just hold them there. I'm on my way. And without a doubt, to this day, the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life was tell your sons, your mum's gone. I don't really remember it, but I know it was incredible. And I remember telling people it was the hardest thing I ever done. I don't really remember the effects, but it's funny, you know, as you go through life, people often, do you remember that? You remember the scenarios, but you don't remember the emotions. Because see, when you get really bad emotions, you tend to block them out. People say to me, you know, I've been stabbed up and all that. And like, they, did it hurt? I'm like, not as much as I hurt that. You know, because no, it don't hurt. Because I had a blade out my chest once. And I'm like, wow, fucking hell. What'd you put that there for? You know, I can't help joking about it. Because it don't actually hurt. 2 days later, killing you. But at the time, and it's the same with real bad, deep emotions. And I've found you don't remember them because they're really, really hurtful. You, as I say, you tend to remember the scenarios. But no.
How has your life been with your two boys, the bond you got with your two boys for the last 6 years?
Without a doubt, that was a horrendous episode. I had to move house. Because the memory factor, not the memory factor, I've got my memories, the reminders. Memories and reminders are very different. The memories you've always got, they're there, and they're nice. Excuse me, because you tend to remember the good bits. But the reminders are killers, chip away at you every day. So I was in my house, and I'm thinking, can't stay here, fucking do my head in. Everywhere I look, it's Elena, you know, so must be doing their head in and all. So we moved, and it was brilliant. It was like someone opening the doors and a bright light shining with a big smiling face there, if you like wow, you know. And it gave us new memories. Nothing in my house is Elena other than all the pictures I've got of her. And they're everywhere, big ones, you know, and it kind of helps you move on. Even her car, I kept her Jeep for a while. I used to go up in the village in her Jeep, and you see people pointing, it's Elena's car, it's Elena's car. Not for nasty reasons, just that's Elena's car. And I thought, fuck it, this Jeep's got to go. And it all, you have to be brave to move on. And my advice to anyone that ever finds themselves in that position, move on quick. It's not heartless. It's the way forward. Don't dwell on bad shit because it'll pull you down. And I always take the positive out of everything. And it's puts a smile on my face now because Helena gave me two of the most precious things I've ever had. In my life, I look at them boys and everyone tells me what a great father I am, how well I do with them. But it's Elena. She's still there, but she's still in my heart, still in my head. And go back to school years, right? The early school years, what I said earlier, that's what sets your path out, right? Well, she set their path out.
Yeah, brilliant.
Okay, I picked it up, you know, but she set the path. They go to private school. All right, I bought into it. I owned half of it, but
that what, was you bought half the school.
Yeah, and just logic.
That's one way of getting free just, fees.
Exactly right. You didn't know on the head. I worked it out when she said, "I don't want them going to school in coin."
Yeah.
I went, no, nor do I, because I don't want a pair of village idiots.
Yeah.
And this is this village is idiot fucking rich. So I said, go and find a school. So she's found one under construction. And I bought into it. And the deal I got, no fees for all their schooling thing. And 1% of the yield paid quarterly, which is very nice, believe me now. Now it's all been going.
Yeah.
Been going. Ricardo's been there. Ricardo went there when he was three. So he's been there like, what, 13 years? And work out Sebastian's 14, you know. No fees. So I've had my money back, you know, do the maths, you know, 180 grand.
Is that what you put in, 1080?
Yeah.
That makes sense, right?
Mate, and I've had my money back.
How's your life?
And I get 1% yield.
How's your life been these last few years, Rick?
Well, the first two were, I mean, the first thing, when Elena got ill, and it was kind of funny, I never, until the day she died, I never thought she was going to die. With all your research, with your stage fours, 100% don't do it. I actually thought she's a fighter and she will win this one. Because her age, such a nice person. So lovely, Elena. She didn't have an enemy in
the
world.
Not a bad bone, you know, in her body, was there?
And no.
Yeah.
And I thought, she'll fight this, got a hard couple of years, she'll fight this and crack on. Never. So when she died, I'm like, fucking wow. Just threw me. Although I knew it, I never thought that day would come. First 2 years after that were very difficult. But I was very lucky because I had the two young boys. Very demanding. So that was
What's it like being a dad without a missus there?
And
to
a mum.
That's what I mean, your dad and a mum, but without your missus there, you're having to do everything.
Yeah, but it kind of comes natural.
Okay.
It's one of them things, it gets put on you, you just do it.
Yeah.
You know, people, I mean, I don't have a cleaner. People come around my house, like, I'll get you a cleaner. I'm like, I ain't got a cleaner. They went, well, who does your cleaning? I went, well, I'll give you a clue. It ain't fucking them two. You know, I just naturally do it. My house is always immaculate, tidy. They're the same. They're not allowed to just come in and, you know, at first, you know, it's kind of funny because at first I was getting things done. I rented the bar out when Elena went into the hospice. So I had 10 months. In the hospice with her.
Yeah.
So I was with her. And the bar rented like that.
Yeah.
Because it's such, I had offers every month for that bar to be rented because it was so busy. So when I decided to rent it, I did queuing up. So I was just saying, you can have it. And cracked on now, still there. Lovely crack. But the first 2 years was a kind of learning process for me and for them. Because, you know, they lost their mum and ended up with me. Jesus, what a fucking deal. Poor bastards, you know. And I mean, it's quite nice that people, they all say, that fantastic you are. Dodge, I can't tell you how close we are.
Yeah.
People every day say to me, Jesus, I wish I was like that
close
with my kids.
Dad,
Elena give me that.
Yeah.
Elena give me that. You have to work on it yourself, but Elena give me the opportunity and I took it. So it's called interaction with your family. It's quite normal behaviour. But a lot of men don't do that.
Yeah.
A lot of men can't do that because they have to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, they go to work 7, get home at 8.
Ready for the bath, you know? Kids in bed, yeah.
Beds are in bed when they go to work.
Don't get to see them.
Kids are in bed when I come home.
And that's the biggest regret in most men, you know.
And that's not their fault. That's just life. I'm very lucky. I'm retired.
Yeah.
The day she died, I retired. Don't need the money, you know. Not worth fortunes, but I'm well comfortable. I have a fantastic income.
Yeah.
You know, you have rents, pensions, dividends, and they're all solid, mate. Yeah. You know, I built them, but still a bit of luck there, you know.
Rick, before we finish up here, where can people find your book? Nightmares of an Essex Boy.
Nightmares of an Essex Boy is basically about a hard, I wouldn't say a dark episode.
Man, that's funny. Look at that photo of you.
Yeah, I've got hair there. You've got stress-free. It was just
you look game.
Yeah, just an episode. Just an episode in my life that I wanted to write about. It's not a life story, but it's a true story. Make you laugh, make you cry, especially if you know me. Bit of glamour in there, hardship, whatever, but kind of underlines. Stay focused, because you're gonna get some shit in your life, and it doesn't matter what level, whether it's bad or good, hard, little, big. It depends who you are. You know, some people, you get stronger people and you get weaker people. The weaker people are not bad. They're just not as strong. You know, that doesn't make them bad people. So just wrote that, highlight.
Where can people find that?
It's actually just been released on Amazon Kindle.
Yeah.
On e-format. May go into paperback at a later date. I'm talking with Amazon on that at the moment. But at the moment, I'm quite happy to keep it as an e-book. And we're all happy family. My kids are excited
Rick, I've got to say, life goes on. That's some eventful life you've lived.
Yeah, absolutely. But we all do, Dodge.
Yeah, mate.
All our lives have events. Some people... I always say to people, I've probably not led... my event's a bit hard, but so everyone has their hardships, you know. To a weaker person, they crumble.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but then it's, we all have hard life.
Yeah, mate.
I don't think anyone has an easy life. Even wealthy people have hard lives, you know. It's not about money. It's not about materialistic crap. It's about you. I just want to add, you get, money dominates the world now, right, and shapes people. And that probably is the worst commodity on our planet, because look at me, you know, I've earned a lot of money, you know, in different areas. I've lost a lot of money. Well, not lost a lot of money, but maybe spunked a lot of money, you know, just for the crack. Because if you can earn money, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you spunk that money.
You know you're gaining it somewhere else.
I have been sensible with my money, obviously. That's why I'm comfortable now. But the main thing, and I always say, and I know now, because of the tragic of my wife, gave me a different, how can you say?
Perspective on life?
Yeah, just changes everything. And the one thing it taught me, it ain't about money. Get content with what you got.
Agree.
And you will be happy.
Agree.
If you've got fuck all, get content with fuck all.
And everything's a bonus.
And you watch your fucking smile grow. Yeah. It's not about you got Louis Vuitton and I got fucking Primark. You know, you can both be equally as happy. Get content. And I'm, with all my tragedies and all that, I'm so content, you know, with my life now. And I've got a lot of reasons to be. I've got two beautiful boys. As I say, one's just looks like it's going to crack on with Malaga. Got a lot of pluses, man.
For you, Rick.
You know, so yeah, Rick, it's
I've really enjoyed this. It's good to see you. After all these years.
It's just nice to see you, you know.
Absolutely, and
but obviously, I mean, we've been in touch.
I often look at the
Bournemouth Sevens and I used to think I've got to go to that one year.
You'll love it, mate.
And then I look, I'm thinking, Jesus, what am I saying? I'm 61. I don't ever want to go to that.
30,000 people, you know, partying in a field for a weekend.
I'm too old for that.
Quality. Rick, been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. And I wish you all the best, you and your boys.
I wish you well with your podcast.
Mate. You're a good man.
Nice to see you.
Cheers, fella. Well done, fella. Take care, mate. Hi guys, I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Can you do us a favour and leave us a review, as it massively helps us grow the show? Cheers, guys.